Today, the new iconoclasm. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour and with a bit of philosophy on the side. I'm joined again by Salvatore Pabones. Hello.
Hi, and I'm glad to be part of that philosophy on the side.
Yeah. I think this is becoming a bit of a regular thing, isn't it? So a bit of a Friday afternoon thing about philosophy. So
Friday philosophy, here we go.
And there's a really interesting conversation to be had about all these statues and people suddenly wanting to pull them down.
Well, people who don't even know what they are. but I think we can get beyond this, you know, debate between burn the patriarchy versus people who don't know their own history, and think about what iconoclasm really means in a longer historical sweep. Think about, you know, why it is people want to pull down statues in the first place. It's certainly not because they walk by those statues on a daily basis and feel angry at them. Let's be serious. Most of us hardly notice the statues we walk by.
Well, they are, I guess, as a bit of a symbol if you stop and think about them. And of course, a lot of the statues that were put up were paid for by people who'd done quite well and wanted to be remembered.
Oh, well, actually, I think a lot of them were put up by communities who were grateful for those people. So people rarely put up statues to themselves, except in dictatorships. And, you know, I'm sure that Saddam Hussein put up a lot of statues to himself, Kim Jong-un, people like that. But most of the statues we're seeing torn down were honors bestowed by prior generations. So we're in a way, you know, we're in a way condemning our own grandparents and great-grandparents for the things they've done, not so much condemning the people we're pulling down as condemning those who put them up in the first place.
So it's clearly a matter of symbolism insofar that people see an issue and then see a statue and then essentially think of that statue as in some way representing something which it may actually never have represented in the first place.
Well, that's one way to think about it. I mean, you're the philosopher, I'm the sociologist, and we're going to have different ways of thinking about what's happening. When I think about it, I think of it as just an aspect of certain societies. I mean, if you think about it, the Anglo-American societies go back to Reformation England, which was all about pulling down statues. Calvinist England in the 1600s was pulling down, well, late 1500s, early 1600s, was pulling down all sorts of statues. Go to England today, you won't see any statues earlier than 1644. And the reason you won't see them is that, well, your English ancestors, I assume you're of English background, pulled down all the statues that were existing up till that time. And this kind of iconoclasm is pretty distinctively, in the modern world, distinctively English and American as well, as part of our Anglo-American culture, but it's not something that's been happening in, you know, France or, God forbid, Italy. I mean, imagine if Italians started pulling down Michelangelo's statues and Bernini's statues as products of a patriarchal racist society. We'd all be in the streets protesting that instead of pulling down our own. So there is something about society here that's where some societies seem to have these recurrent outbreaks of iconoclasm, while others, we would be aghast if they actually became iconoclastic. I mean, how do we feel now about Mao's iconoclast during the Cultural Revolution destroying the cultural heritage of China? Do we think, fantastic, they pulled down the patriarchy? Or do we think, what a terrible loss?
Right. Or some of the statues that were blown up in the Middle East, you know, which were thousands of years old and represented a whole story about history, and then they were blown up.
Sure. Well, I mean, there are many iconoclastic societies throughout history, and we can start with the Hebrews, if you want, and, you know, Terah's idol shop. So the first recorded episode of iconoclasm is actually the birth of monotheism, when Abraham, left in charge of his father's idol shop, destroys all the idols, and then his father asks, what are you doing? You know, when he comes home, that's our livelihood. And he says, well, I left this, the one idol did it, that one idol you see remaining, he killed them all. And, you know, Tara says, an idol can't do anything. And Abraham says, that's exactly my point, is that the idols have no power of their own. And so, of course, it means nothing to destroy them. Mm. And that argument resurfaces. I mean, Akhenaten in Egypt, when he created a monotheism for Egypt around the sun god, destroyed all the idols. We've seen this in, of course, in Islam in the 7th century with the destruction of idols. We saw that in the Byzantine Empire. So in the Greek church, people might remember, who are not Greek, might kind of know that in the Orthodox church, there are lots of painted icons that are often venerated. People kiss the icons. They're really beloved. But there are no idols. There are no three-dimensional statues in Eastern Orthodox churches. Why? Because that was a compromise from their own 8th and 9th century schism over iconoclasm. Some people wanting statues, some people not wanting statues, and you know, each emperor coming in and destroying and persecuting those who came before until they finally accepted, well, we'll have painted icons, but not sculpted ones. And that's an uneasy compromise that is held to this day. So, you know, there have been societies that have been historically prone to iconoclasm. Now, I can't tell you why. I don't know what it is about those societies that have been that way. But our Anglo-American societies have had these recurring bouts of iconoclasm. It never goes away. And honestly, I'm not sure what it is about our societies. Maybe you have an answer.
I'm not sure I do. Other than to say, it seems to me to be telling us something about the nature of history and how we view history and how we think history is important or not. And I'm mindful of 1984, you know, the novel, where effectively they rewrite the past to redefine the present. And in fact, there's a whole industry there of, you know, reshaping and retelling the old stories in a new way to make it current and appropriate for the current view of the world. Now, I don't think Orwell was writing necessarily just about a far future. I think he was thinking also about the interpretation of past events and how they're reinterpreted for today. And I think this is something about the same thing, insofar that, you know, to my mind, there is a legacy right the way back over the generations of buildings and statues and, you know, they are all relatively harmless, but it's what people read into them and how they're interpreted, which is a now thing rather than a historical thing.
Well, it is definitely something about us now, not about the history. So, for example, in Italy, there was an Olympic stadium built for the 1940 Olympics that were never held. And in front of that stadium is a massive statue of a fascist symbol. And it's still there. They never tore it down. Now, you'd think, you know, Italy wanted to rewrite history to make Italy a country that was oppressed by fascism instead of one that was a fascist oppressor. And they successfully rewrote that history after the war. Italy were kind of the good guys. Allied troops were welcomed. But they didn't tear down their fascist monuments. They even didn't rename many of their fascist streets. So, you know, in our Calvinist societies and, you know, and England, while the Calvinists may not have won out in England, they did win out in America. Of course, the Pilgrim Fathers, who left England because they wanted to flee the oppression of the Church of England, went to America, to Massachusetts, and founded a Calvinist society in the New World. This Calvinist strain in England may be best represented by the Liberal Democrats in the UK, certainly broadly represented in the United States by a liberal elite in the United States. This Calvinist strain is very iconoclastic and doesn't necessarily have to do with religion. I mean, back in the 1600s, it had to do with religion. It doesn't necessarily have to do with history because I'm not sure how much they want to rewrite history books as such, but there seems to be something about images that offend people, and it does. They don't seem to offend Catholics. They don't seem to offend Lutherans, for that matter. Lutheran Germany did not go through the kind of iconoclasm that the Calvinist Netherlands and United Kingdom did. I'm not sure what it is, but it definitely is something rooted in that heritage that I think continues to this day.
No, I tend to agree, and it's hard to fathom. What I would observe is that people don't see these statues as art or as artifacts. They do see them as something else, don't they?
Well, that's interesting because, of course, if a mob broke into the art museums and started slashing statues and destroying paintings, I think most of those who are calling to bring down statues would be aghast. On the other hand, I'm not even so sure if they would be aghast, because they might want art museums to divest or to not acquire paintings and artworks that they feel are, colonialist or oppressive. I mean, if we can imagine if the Museum of Contemporary Art were to display adoring statue of Tony Abbott shaking hands with John Howard, there might be a mob breaking into it to tear it down. So I'm not even sure about that. I mean, that's a question. Honestly, I wish we had a call-in show, because I'd love to have people's ideas about that. That is, is art exempt? Other people's art is exempt. So if anyone wanted to, break up Italian art, Chinese art, Russian art, we would all be aghast. But are these statues being torn down because they are the people being torn down, because they are representations at all? I mean, look, even Lincoln has seen his statues attacked in the United States for being racist. And when you're pulling down statues of Lincoln, who's left?
Well, Churchill in the UK, a bit the same,
Exactly.
People with a massive shadow that that's been cast by their presence in terms of the future history of both the US and the UK. I wonder to what extent the people who are actually actively involved in pulling them down really get the history, really get the story, or whether it's actually, just something on the spur of the moment. I don't know. I mean, I've got no way of understanding. But I do know that the initiatives in London by certain groups were quite well planned, and they used social media, and they took ropes, and they took picks and things with an absolute intent to do something. And in fact, if you take the church example, they actually put steel box around the statue to protect it. I mean, it's wacky. It really is. I don't fully understand.
Well, that's why I suggested that we talk today about the actual word iconoclasm, because iconoclasm is different from the history wars, right? It's the idea that symbols should be destroyed. And while the people who are tearing down these statues and defacing them, in their own self-justification, they're justifying it with racism, sexism, misogyny, all sorts of evil isms of the past. Is that actually their motive? Or is that just a respectable reason for doing the kind of primeval destruction, that tendency to just go out and smash something? Well, it's socially inappropriate to smash store windows. Only a looter, quote unquote, would do that. But it's politically acceptable to smash a statue, because you can always say you were doing it for political reasons. And I do have to ask myself whether it's the actual abuse of statues or, say, the Antifa organizations in the United States. So thankfully, we don't seem to have much of that here in Australia, but who don't really strike me as being particularly anti-fascist. If anything, the Antifa in the United States seem much more fascist than anyone else. I mean, they're dressed up in black uniforms, ordering people around, punching people, marching around the streets. I mean, who is fascist in America if not the Antifa? Yet for them, calling it anti-fascist is a way of making it, in some sense, maybe to themselves, politically acceptable. That is, they're trying to seize the politically correct ground. And so in the same way, just like there's that urge to march in the streets and boss people around, I don't have that urge. You don't seem to have that urge, but I know a lot of people do. Maybe that urge to destroy images is also something that, people just want to burn it down. I mean, we saw the spectacle of, I forget her name, the activist on the ABC saying, burn it down, burn it all down. Well, is she specifically wanting to burn down specific politically inappropriate things, or is it just that urge to tear things down and build a new world, that kind of utopianism that runs so strong in Anglo-American thought that's breaking out?
Or is it that a particular statue is valued by society in a way that the person who's perhaps trying to, you know, make a point is saying it's not as valuable as you think it is? I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's a...
Well, except nobody values these statues. So, I mean, a few tourists maybe come take photos, but, you know, I haven't seen, except when they're threatened.
Yeah.
I haven't seen people gathered in Hyde Park to admire the statues. I mean, I've had friends and romantic associates thinking I was crazy for standing in front of World War One monuments and pointing out the iconography, which I just find in Australia, as an American in Australia, this World War One fetishism is fascinating. And of course, there are very good reasons for it because of the extraordinary number of Australians who lost their lives in World War One. And I understand that the people of 1918 to 1925 Australia had a real need to commemorate these losses, and so they put up the monuments. And as a sociologist, I'm fascinated to see these monuments. And in my own professional, from my own professional eye, I'm comparing them to Civil War monuments in the United States, which served the same sort of purpose. The Civil War in the United States was such a, you know, horrific conflict with such incredible loss of life that it's widely memorialized. Just as every square in Australia has a remembrance statue for World War One, every old town square in the United States has a remembrance statue for the Civil War. And they're put up by the public to work their way through their own feelings. And a lot of the statues that are meant to honor someone are, again, put up by the public. Not, we stress this at the beginning. They're not put up by, you know, Rhodes did not put up the Rhodes statue, right? These are statues put up by the public or by institutions to recognize the contributions of others. Now, in a way, what people are saying when they want to tear these down, it's not, you know, they want to tear down a statue that's treasured by this person or that person, because very few people even know these statues exist. I mean, maybe the Churchill statue in Whitehall people know about, but these other statues are for the most part, relatively obscure. If you look up on Wikipedia who they were, you can find something about the person and make a case for tearing it down. But most people have to look up on Wikipedia who the people are in these statues. So I don't buy that, the idea that this is a war over history. I see it much more as a, you know, an urging to destroy and a utopianism. Because, of course, the people who are tearing down statues seem to sincerely believe that they're clearing the space for something new and wonderful. They don't see themselves as destroyers. They see themselves as builders.
Mm. Well, I don't think we're going to get to the bottom of why or how. And what I would say is, if people are watching this, they want to leave a comment, we'd be very interested, particularly interested this week, in your views and comments as to why people do what they do with regard to statues. But it's been a fascinating conversation. And I have to say, I'm no further clearer in my own mind about why they would do it, but it's quite fascinating.
Well, I'm not clear about why they do it either, but I think it's really crucial to realize that we do it. That is, our society puts these statues up and takes them down. And I know you're wrapping up here, but let me just make a point. The societies where people don't put up the statues themselves, the societies where statues are imposed by the government, don't seem to have the same tendency for people to gather in the streets to tear them down. Look, in Italy, again, they have statues to the Italian invasion of Ethiopia, which the whole world condemns as an evil fascist militarist campaign. And yet the statues are there. The streets are still named after the generals who participated in that war. But those statues and streets weren't named by popular acclaim in a democratic way. They were put up by kings and Il Duce. And so no one seems to care much about them. Here, where we in democratic societies have recognized people in the past, we seem much more concerned with tearing down our own monuments. And that's the nub of it to me. Although I can't put my finger on it, that seems to be where the finger should be placed.
So maybe it's a symbol of good democracy at work. Maybe that's the secret.
Well, you know, I honestly think that in a way is true. I mean, look, you don't have a crime like, say, your financial mispropriety where you don't have a functioning financial system. You know, you have to have the good system to have the bad prime. And in the same way, you don't have people getting excited about these things, and except where you have people excited to take control of society in the first place. So, the good with the bad. Though I want to be clear, I absolutely don't support pulling down the statues, even if I think maybe it's a sign of a healthy democracy where people do get that excited and want to pull them down.
Yeah, well, I must underscore me neither. And in fact, I must say personally, I quite like looking at them from the point of view of the art and the aesthetic, because they actually tell you quite a lot about how things were then. And I think that is, when those things disappear, we lose something important in terms of understanding the past. And so I come back to my view is, I do think it gives us a view on the past as well as the present. Appreciate your time today, and very, very fascinating conversation. I look forward to the comments from the viewers and see what they think. And I guess we'll catch up again next time for another Philosophical Corner.
All right, looking forward to it.
Great to talk. Thanks.